So we're going to see opportunity in companies like this where they don't necessarily need $100 oil today. They need $100 oil in 2 years or a year, because by the time we get to that, their production will be so much higher than it is today or than it was a year ago, that now they hit the proper point of the bull cycle at a time where they've really exploited their reserves. They've added reserves, they've delineated their pools, they have massive drilling programs, and they can go into it and say, hey, look, this is where we are. And if the markets are supportive, now we can go and continually grow this company even further. So really, really big fan there. We like big pools with large OOIPs, original oil in place, with the low recovery factors. That's always been the mandate. I think running with oil that's already in the ground is a lot better investment thesis than trying to go in and invest in exploration companies or wildcatting companies.
Shabam, how are you doing?
Good, Andy. It's good to be back. Always exciting in the oil markets, as you know. So it's always fun to chat and to come back and do a part four, part five, where are we now? So,
yeah, indeed. No, I love having you on. You have a great take on the junior energy markets here. Let's get a quick overview. Last time we talked about, we had a thought that a short squeeze could be coming in. We almost had it. I think we almost had it in early April. We sold off a little bit since then, but we're having a floor here. It seems like it's making a floor. And oil just seems strong going into the end of the year. What are your thoughts about the broader market?
Yeah, you betcha. I think the overall thesis, there's sort of two parts to it. The OPEC plus solidarity, which we've discussed before, and the U.S. shale underperformance going forward, which of course has been delayed by about 12 months, we can say. And then on the other side of it, you have the sort of the geopolitics aspect, which goes up and down depending on the day, depending on the type of news and who's reporting what, exactly what happens. So, and the geopolitics have been driving the price up and down on the side. But on the main thesis part of things, we continue to see OPEC plus solidarity. We see nobody really overproducing except maybe Iraq, who have come back to the table and said they would compensate for it. Whether that actually happens in the latter half of the year, we will find out. But overall, OPEC plus has been relatively cohesive as a unit. And then, of course, we're seeing some U.S. shale underperformance finally come to the table. Had the impact of the dropping rigs, the impact of the lower DUCs, the impact of less startups in the Gulf of Mexico. And that's now showing up. We have almost 60 to 70% of companies have reported on the Permian side for production. And we can say that more than 50% of them are down on the production numbers, Q1 versus Q4 of last year. So a trend that's developing. We have a lot of data. We have a lot of guidance to go with it. Definitely got to be careful with a lot of Permian producers. They have sandbagged their guidance. So they have put way lower guidance than what they should have, meaning they can report beats all the time. But when you compare the numbers year over year or quarter over quarter, it's a downward trend. So I think Chevron being one of the main ones, that was a very interesting one. And then EOG has stopped growing after many years of absolutely relentless growth. So at the baseline, the thesis remains as it is. Inventories have finally begun to draw here. Yes, we saw inventory draws in certain parts of the world in the second half of 2023, but now we're seeing globally the inventories are drawing, and that's exactly what we want as oil bulls. We want to drain down all this excess, and we get to a point where the physical market will be so tight that nothing can be done about it. It just has to go up, geopolitics risk or not, barring extra supply, which at these prices, we don't see any huge extra supply on the market being sanctioned at this point in time.
Okay. How does the China narrative and the really now the Indian narrative play into this with their demand?
Yeah. So I think Chinese demand 2023 was an anomaly year. It went up way higher than it has any other year. One of the reasons was Chinese demand was down in 2022. So when you have this gyration where a usually growing country loses demand because of their of course, there are lockdowns in 2022. You came into 2023 with a huge bang. We saw large increases sort of across the board, especially in terms of percentage increases in the jet fuel portion of things. And then the petrochemicals demand really went high with all the excess plastics and propylene and propane consumption to make products for the globe. There was sort of a de-inventory trend that happened in 2023 with the rising interest rates. A lot of retailers, a lot of extra products kind of got taken off the market, not carrying as much inventory. That trend has now come back where we are now at lower inventories, so that the buying power has come back. And we're seeing continual growth there in gasoline and then in jet fuel as well. Again, there's a lot of flights that are being restarted, which have still not been restarted since pre-pandemic. So something like a European to China and then China into New Zealand, into Australia, into Hong Kong, some of these flights are still not back to the levels that they were at. So now that they're rebounding, you're seeing very, very good jet fuel consumption. And with that, travel numbers. And when people travel, they consume even more in the countries that they go to. So from that point of view, it's really good. Indian demand, I just posted this morning, 6.1% up year over year. That's the April number. And gasoline is up 14% year over year. So the numbers are really, really looking good. I believe that the way that it took America maybe 50 years to develop their petroleum consumption economy, it took China 20 years. It might take India 10 years because of modernization, globalization. The people have access to the internet. They are traveling way more. So they know what's going on. They're able to generate a lot more income. There's a lot more of a business climate as well. So I think we're going to see continued record demand coming out of India. And those two countries, of course, make up such huge populations that if they really hit their higher gears, we're going to see some very, very, very shocking numbers come out of those two countries. So really good. I think there is some slowdown, yes, in the Chinese property market. There is some slowdown in the Chinese consumption of certain products and goods. The freight rates coming out of China are definitely impacting the prices of products across the world. So all of that does hamper demand to a certain extent. But on the other side of it, we're just seeing such explosive growth that really we're just denting growth as opposed to any sort of major slowdown. But hey, if the Chinese property market starts to pick up, we're going to see some very interesting beats on global oil demand. And OPEC Plus will have to add barrels way faster, which we already feel they're going to have to add barrels way faster than the market thinks, but possibly even faster if we can see some stimulus action and some lowering of rates. It could get really, really spicy very fast.
Yeah, and I would agree. I think we're really starting to see the tightness is starting to hit right now, even though, how do we say this? Even though it might not be coming out entirely in the inventory reports, it really is starting to hit right now. Even though the inventory reports are showing tightness, it's just not to the extreme that I think that the tightness really is. Talk to me about some companies. I know you run a fund here. What can you comment about companies that are you still looking at to acquire some companies, or what companies are attractive to you that you see out there that offer investors good value?
Yeah, you bet. I think White Tundra has definitely moved to a model of supporting some of the smaller names, more of the beat up value stocks, we'll say. The value investors have not had a good 2 years, got absolutely shellacked in certain names. Third names are also lower than they were in June of 2022, whereas some names on the larger cap side, the blue chip side, are a little bit higher than they were in the so-called peak of June 2022. So it's created sort of two things. One is a even bigger relative valuation gap between the two different subsets or subsectors of the industry, and it's created more opportunity on the smaller side because companies now are in a position where they can grow a lot faster than they were because they had previously debt on their books or they just didn't want to grow at the time. So I think we're still a large holder of Surge, a name that's gotten beaten up. It hasn't really had the same bounce. It hasn't had the same support, but of course, heavily tied to commodity price torque and of course have the growth aspects that go with it. Drilling absolutely fantastic wells in the Frobisher in Saskatchewan, and then the multilaterals and the Sparky continue to throw off a lot of cash flow, and they have hundreds of locations of this. So really one that's in a low gear right now. As commodity prices rise, they can really up that gear and push the production growth and the dividend even higher. So that's on the slightly bigger side. On the smaller side, we've really honed in on Prospera Energy. This is, of course, a holding that we got into in January 2023 through the non-brokered private placement. I've helped them raise money through a GOR, gross overriding royalty financing, in November of last year, and really supporting the company. I'm talking to C-suite twice, three times a week, really supporting them with their drilling plans, their technical work, and a company that on the sidelines has gone from 400 barrels a day, 400 BOEs per day, to right now about 1,300 BOEs per day, with further growth here with the drilling program this year. So we're really seeing opportunity in companies like this where they don't necessarily need $100 oil today. They need $100 oil in 2 years or a year, because by the time we get to that, their production will be so much higher than it is today or than it was a year ago, that now they hit the proper point of the bull cycle at a time where they've really exploited their reserves. They've added reserves, they've delineated their pools, they have massive drilling programs, and they can go into it and say, hey, look, this is where we are. And if the markets are supportive, now we can go and continually grow this company even further. So really, really big fan there. We like big pools with large OOIPs, original oil in place, with the low recovery factors. That's always been the mandate. I think running with oil that's already in the ground is a lot better investment thesis than trying to go in invest in exploration companies or wildcatting companies. So really, these two at this point make up about 60% of the White Tundra portfolio. So really have put even more concentration, we'll say, just with building relationships with these management teams, understanding their operations day in, day out, and also being able to support them with financings and specific other technical work. We get a lot better understanding of their field than maybe the other companies that are out there, where, again, this is the oil industry. It takes forever to get to know these companies. There's such little information out there. You have to do most of the due diligence yourself. So really, concentration is where the White Tundra portfolio has sort of moved into, because of the time spent on the companies that are in there already and sort of building those relationships.
Yeah, just for full disclosure, and you don't know this, by the way, I am an investor in Prospera Energy, and I've read the reports and the press releases. I'm shocked that the price hasn't moved up, just because of they have just really amped up their production. They've done a great job, really, since January, as I see it, just really, really upped the production. So I'm very, very pleased. And I think it's only a matter of time before they really start to move. So, exciting. So let's talk about natural gas here. Natural gas, it seems we bounced a little bit here off the bottom. I was talking to another analyst, a week or two ago, and he mentioned that the natural gas curve, the futures curve, is actually pointing to much higher natural gas prices. What's your thoughts on natural gas as we move into the second part of the year?
Yeah, so very, very interesting commodity, of course, as it always is, natural gas, but one where really the price drives the sentiment and the price drives the narrative. Oil is to this to some extent, but natural gas, people really just become absolutely defeated, and then they become absolutely euphoric when at the same time, the futures curve hasn't really changed. But when natural gas was $10, $12 an MCF in 2022, the futures curve two, 3 years out was still $3, $4, $5. Today, our spot prices do something. It was at $1.50, $1.60. The 2, 3, 4 year forward curve, the futures curve really hasn't changed. So really, it's a short-term phenomena. And yes, can it continue to exist for a while? Yes, the spot price will continue getting hammered. The futures will continue coming down. It is possible. But really, natural gas is a commodity where the producers have finally shown discipline. They've come into the beginning of the year, EQT, Chesapeake, they've said, okay, we're actually going to cut production. We're not going to complete wells, or we're going to complete wells, but not turn them into line. So that does create some sort of a insurance policy. We can say that if natural gas does go to $4, $5, $6, these producers can add a lot of these barrels right away, or molecules, we'll say, right away. So it does create a sort of a headwind in that manner, but it is good to see them restrict production right now when it's required. And we are 5-7 BCF below the US production that we were at just in November, December, January. So really, that production has come down. The wells have declined. But the reality of it is, North America sits on an absolute ocean of natural gas, and we got associated gas coming out now from these oil plays, the Permian, the Montney, the Duvernay, which continues to get put into line as sort of an extra byproduct, excess product. So there's a lot of factors there. But really what I'm trying to say is for short periods of time, you can see natural gas go a lot higher, given that the producers still take time to react. If we see a big price movement, they still need to go and complete the wells or turn in line the wells or go and actually add those molecules back. So there's that. And then over a longer term, any producer can go and hedge into the forward curve. So if they think that, hey, we're okay with getting $3.50 on the 1 year strip or the 2 year strip, they can go and hedge into it and they can get that price and lock it in. So they don't have to wait for the spot price to rebound. They can just go and lock it in and sort of take the loss now and then sort of take advantage of the higher prices into the future. So it's going to be a very volatile commodity. There's so many moving factors. The demand for natural gas continues to rise, not just globally, but also within North America. When you go and sell gas for $2 a MCF, people will go and build all sorts of manufacturing and distribution and processing that uses your natural gas because it's stable supply. They can lock in longer term contracts, and they can get such a good price for it compared to the volatility of some of the other power sources out there. And not just the volatility, but the lack of reliability of them is sort of is something that these entities just can't afford to do. So we're going to see continual rise in the demand for it. And the supply side seems to have sort of taken a breather here. We'll see how that goes, because just as we're talking about Permian underperformance on oil, that means that there's going to be less associated gas come out of there too. So there is a sort of a X factor here where if the Permian really starts to slow down, we will see a loss in gas volumes possibly, even if the gas oil ratio continues to go up. So exciting times, I think. You can make your money in natural gas by trying to time the market. People have made lots of money. People have lost lots of money doing that. But I do think it's a commodity where it does make sense to follow. And it does make sense that there's some skewed risk-reward scenarios that pop up actually quite often if you're willing to play it both ways. So yeah, those are some brief thoughts there. Yeah.
All right. Any companies in natural gas that you're looking at or considering or that you like?
Yeah, I think this is one of the very, very interesting things is as the natural gas prices come down, the companies haven't really been affected. Their share prices have held in very strongly. I think part of it, of course, is that they're valued on the futures curve, not on the spot price. So it doesn't make sense for them to come down based on 1 or 2 months of revenue or 5 months of revenue / cash flow. So really not seeing any huge opportunities, but I will say that some of these Canadian natural gas producers that have liquids exposure, such as ARC Resources or Crew Energy, that are drilling high condensate yield wells, some of them have a huge, huge, huge acreage. So if you're trying to value them at today's production or today's cash flow, you might say, okay, that's a very fair valuation today. But if you accept the fact that they can grow production 10, 15, 20% over the next couple of years, maybe every year, now all of a sudden the valuation, it makes a lot more sense to come in and take a position possibly in those. But of course, we are primarily oil investors, so definitely like the oil bullish thesis way more than natural gas, which is more of a short-term timing or just a seasonality, weather-driven pattern, which again, that is for a certain kind of investor. It's just very hard to make a long-term investment on that, a 2, 3, 4 year investment in the smaller names. You really have to go to the bigger names in order to really take advantage of their growth plans and win that way, as opposed to through straight up commodity price exposure, which is definitely a very risky strategy, I will say.
Excellent. Okay. Well, any final thoughts for us here, and I'll let you go, but yeah, any final thoughts, and give us again, your website, your fund's website, and how people can reach you.
Yeah. I think just final thoughts is just keep your eye out on the data. The data we have is comes in daily. It comes in weekly. It comes in monthly. We don't need to think too far out and say, oh, what's going to happen with Namibian exploration and how many barrels is going to add. By the time that it's going to add barrels, we will know a lot more about when and how many barrels it's going to add. So there's no point trying to have our crystal ball look too far out. Just take the data as it comes, look at the month-by-month inventories, look at the month-by-month supply, the demand, and really we can get a really good picture as to where things are going. Just let the data come to us as opposed to trying to forecast or estimate too far out or too many things. And as far as the website, I'm on Twitter, most active, WhiteTundraSG. And then the website is whitetundra.ca. All the archived podcasts, interviews, and the seminars are on there as well, along with, of course, my updated portfolio for full transparency. So that's there. And then there's a contact page there, or my personal email is also on the website. So always love chatting oil and gas, and happy to take any other questions that people want to email or DM or send me.
Yes, you do. You've been always been very gracious to me wanting to talk oil. So Shivam, I want to thank you so much. I'll have you on again in the next 3 or 4 months. We'll get an update as we get through the second and third quarter. We'll get an update from you.
Okay, you betcha. Thanks, Andy.
Thank you.